There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Monday. Glad to have you here. Live local talk over the hour. And coming up at 1:30, we'll talk about the future of the Hank. What happens if there's not a, as the contract is now, just for the last year for the Bay Bears, if there's not a Double-A baseball team there, City of Mobile may have to turn the land back to the developer in the state that they found it in. We'll get more details coming up with Mobile City Councilman John Williams at 1:30. Right now, I want you all to say hello to Skip Poe with Aldot, who is here to talk about the roadways in the state, but specifically this week, as we mentioned in the news this morning, Work Zone Awareness Week. Skip, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
Work Zone Awareness Week. So is this something brand new, something y'all do yearly? Is it an Alabama thing, a national thing? What is this?
It's actually a national thing. It's really taken a lot of emphasis in Alabama over the last 10, 15 years. I don't have the exact date on when it started. But it's really to call attention not just to our workers, but really it's to the traveling public, to let them know that every spring we want to emphasize as the construction season starts, because let's be realistic, we don't do as much work over the wintertime as we do spring and summer and fall, that to stop, and I don't mean stop in your car, but just stop in your mind and really pay attention and focus when you're driving through a work zone and be more cautious and slow down and be aware of what's going on.
You know, the sad thing is this is on top of people's minds here in our area, and I know there's probably incidents outside of our area, but I'm thinking back here at home where there have been deadly consequences.
Yes, it's really sad from the standpoint of, you know, Clay Crutcher from John Walton Construction Company just in the last month and a half, real tragic for what happened there, and then the fact that that's the second time. I mean, most contractors may deal with this once in their lifetime at all, and then the Walton family is having to do it twice with the fact their own son, Marshall, 4 or 5 years ago. And then Aldot's experience ourselves. We've lost two of our workers in the last 3 years. Jacob Smith from North Alabama, he died on the Tennessee River Bridge in 2016 when basically two motors, the best way to describe it is they had a drag race to see who was going to get to the lane closure first. The one that lost went ahead and went through the drums and hit Jacob and killed him. And then we had a surveyor right there in Montgomery, not even on the interstate, on the Atlanta Highway, which would basically be like Airport Boulevard here in Mobile. They're out surveying, not in the median, just over here on the side. Driver just turns around, runs off the road, and runs over him as he's sitting there surveying. So that was in the, I think that was Halloween 2017. So it's really hit home for us hard to turn around and a coworker that you're there one moment and you're gone the next.
You know, and anybody listening right now has been through, you know, a construction zone, seen the people working there, you know, as they've gone through. And like, you have to have thought, you got to think about it. I mean, I see those people and go, you know, how many times I've told my wife, I'm like, I wouldn't be doing that. With as fast as the cars are going out here, I wouldn't be, because just a little bit of a hiccup for that person. And there's nothing between you and a vehicle going at a high rate of speed. Even if they've slowed down to the correct speed, you're still going. It's not like you're going 5 miles an hour.
No, speed reductions in work zones are generally anywhere from 10 to 20 miles per hour.
You're still going fast, Skip.
You're still going fast. You just imagine, I mean, 40, 45 miles an hour. You know, for those who are out there playing baseball, you get with a 45-mile-an-hour fastball, you're thinking, oh, that didn't hurt. It's one thing to hit for something about the size of a 3-inch baseball. Now you get hit by a several-ton car going 45. No, the hazard or the risk of death by getting hit by a 45-mile-per-hour vehicle is... you're dead.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of been my personal thought, that it's not just people going super fast through a construction zone. that the people that are obeying the law, that's still a very, it just scares me from a driver just to look at the people working and go, man, you're out when they're on the side of a truck. You know, now the truck's between them and the outside. They're in between you and that truck or something like that close to the road. I mean, that's just, it makes me nervous for them.
There's a lot of risk, paving jobs especially. And you think about the standpoint, everybody's driven through traffic and they've seen the asphalt spreader back there laying the mix down. Mm-hmm. And you've got several dump trucks. You know, the asphalt contractor will have a whole crew out there, and some of them are right on the edge of the center line trying to rake and keep that joint neat and ready to be rolled. Well, we have people out there as well that are out there taking tickets. They're trying to get a ticket for the asphalt because how we pay for it by the ton. We're checking the temperature of the mix. And in general, if you take a road like the whether it's a two-lane or a four-lane road, in general, the driver's on the driver's side. So our inspector is walking right next to traffic, trying to get that ticket away from the driver before he unloads it. You know, because if he's overloaded, there's penalties involved with that. So we're trying to check all that, and that inspector is right there, right along with the contractor's worker who's doing the raking stuff. They're exposed to traffic, so cars are zooming right by.
Yeah, those are the people I'm talking about.
They're the ones at risk.
What happens. So the whole week, Work Zone Awareness Week, and we'll talk about all that, but specifically, too, on Wednesday, you have us wear an orange to bring attention to this.
Just an emphasis. I know the City Council here in Mobile, I believe, they're meeting tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And so the push by ALDOT and the AGC is for the councilman to wear orange or wear their safety yellow vest tomorrow. And all those that are partnering with us this week, we're promoting to wear orange on Wednesday. To call attention. The ribbon, and this ribbon is to signify those four and any of the others that have lost their life in a work zone this week.
Let's talk about some of the specifics down on the roadways when people were working. You and I talked during the news break about the rules are the people working are wearing they're wearing the safety yellow or the orange, right?
Yes. Everybody working on a roadway exposed to traffic is required to wear a safety vest.
Even if somebody's not doing one of the raking jobs you're talking about, whatever, everybody's got to wear this.
Exactly. So if we're out preparing to do a construction project, we're on a design review, and our designers are out checking an existing condition that they want to put in the plans, then they wear one as well. Everyone exposed to traffic is required to wear a safety vest.
Okay, well, let's talk about this, how these accidents happen. I know there's not one overall reason, well, maybe there is, but it has, you know, is it people getting in an accident and then careening into the work crews, or people that drift out of the lane? What worries you most? What keeps you awake at night, Skip?
I think the biggest thing we've seen through the years, let's go back.
Okay.
We had some statistics, and I can't put my hand on right at this moment. That's what I was looking for in the break, how it seems to be a cycle, and that we've seen through the last 15 years, the numbers went up, there was a big emphasis, the numbers went down, and they've been steadily going back up over the last 5 years or so. And we all roughly look to the same thing. What's changed our lives so much in the last 5 years, and that's a smartphone, no matter what brand you use.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we're always connected in our lives, whether it's just email or a phone call or text messaging or social media, you're out there and you're always hitting some kind of message. So you're always engaged. And we've all seen it. We're driving down the road and somebody's in the left-hand lane, not the right-hand lane to start with if it's mm-hmm. a four-lane highway, and they're slowing traffic down. And when you finally pass them on the right-hand side, what are they doing? They're riding down the road and they've got their phone in their hand trying to read a novel or a text message or
right.
something, and they're not engaged to traffic.
Right.
And that's, I think, what you see is that more crashes other than nighttime where folks may be out of control, tired, right. or whatever, a lot of times it's distracted driving. You're trying to do something, you're multitasking while you're going down the road, and you veer off, and next thing, or you drop your phone, or you drop your drink, and now you reach down to grab it, and next thing you know, you're now in the work zone, and you can go, you know, roughly 100 yards in a second, and that little bit of difference, that's the difference.
Well, I mean, and that's what, if I think people can picture this, and we'll run to the break and come back more on this, but think about the times that has something like that has happened. You've drifted off the road. Thank God there's not been a person there. But what if there was? All right, continue this conversation. It's Work Zone Awareness Week, and on Wednesday, wear orange. We'll talk more about this with Skip Poe, with ALDOT, our guest in studio right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 120 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Continuing our conversation about Work Zone Awareness Week from ALDOT. Skip Poe, you're just telling me something, too. This is a good eye-opener that in the majority of cases, somebody drifts off in a construction zone. It's not the workers. It's the drivers that end up getting killed in these accidents.
It is. 4 out of 5 fatalities in work zones end up with a driver getting killed or a passenger. Somebody in the car dies versus the worker. You know, many times those crashes wind up being in hours we're not working.
Yeah.
So now it's just we're paving during the daytime. People are driving through at night. They drift off the road. There's a crash. Fortunately, we're not out there. But in the day, somebody's life is lost because of inattention in the work zone.
Yeah, so one of the, and this is the overall is Work Zone Awareness Week, but y'all have some slogans with ALDOT to remind folks what's going on.
Yeah, so the theme of the week is drive like you work here. So from the standpoint, the workers that are on the roadway, whether they're ours or one of our consultants or one of the county employees or our contractor and their forces, in the day, their husbands and wives, their sons and daughters, they're somebody's family, and mm-hmm. they deserve to go home at the end of the day, just like you and I are going to go home. And everybody wants to go home in the day and see their family. And so if you take that mindset, when you approach that work zone, sure, okay, it may be the case we're paving at night in the daytime and there's nothing going on. You understand that. But you never know at the particular point in time, unless you're driving to that work zone on a regular basis, if people are out there or not. So you need to be alert. You need to be aware. Stay alert. And then when you see workers, then brake. One of our slogans we talked about the worker that died in North Alabama, Jacob. So one of our slogans this week is brake for Jake. You see workers out there, you think about that, you brake, you slow down, and you honor those people working out there. Not necessarily just honor them and put them on a pedestal, but you honor the work they're doing and slow down, and you give them the room, and you don't put them in a hazardous place to be killed.
All right. We talk about the hours, y'all, that there'll be work being done on the roadways, too. What is the rule? I've always wondered this. Not every day I get somebody like you in here. When y'all decide this project is one that the contractor's working on at night, or this is one that they're going to do during the day, or is that just on deadline, or is that on safety issues? How are those decisions, or traffic count? How's that decided?
It's really traffic count. It's certain roadways are going to dictate that. We really gotten to the point where almost statewide all our interstate routes are being paved at nighttime. Roughly, and the traffic's dictating that. If you turn around, we would have thought you could have paved in some of the spots between here and Montgomery in the daytime. You know, you get out in rural Escambia or Conecuh or mm-hmm. Butler County, and it's like you ought to be able to pave. Well, once you get past a certain point in May, all the way through like mid, really, I think that number's or that date's around Labor, right after Labor Day. You pave in the daytime, you could wind up with a 6-mile backup. We saw that in Georgiana several years ago, and that's one of the reasons that, like, man, if we can't even pave in Georgiana, Alabama mm-hmm. on the interstate without getting a 6-mile backup, it's time to reevaluate. So we still have some places. You know, you get up in on 59 in North Alabama and on the new I-22, you still can do it in the daytime. Or if you have a 6-lane section, you may be able to pave in the day, but in general, traffic's what's dictating. If we get to the stage where you're backing up traffic significantly, then we're going to make you pave at night. And sometimes that promotes safety challenges mm-hmm. and quality of work where you can't see as well as you can in the daytime. Your temperature is a little different, but it's a safer environment because you've got less traffic. You have less exposure out there to the workers.
So that's interesting because it is, somebody would say, well, nighttime's got to be more dangerous. But you're saying, in fact, it'd be safer.
You have less vehicles on the roadway, but that's one of the issues you get into is, at that point in time, people have chosen to drive at night because there's less traffic. They may be able to make better time, mm-hmm. let's just say, so mm-hmm. you can let your mind wander where you want to there. And so they always back off the gas when they go through the work zone. So you see less vehicles, but they have the tendency they want to go through the work zone faster, and they don't want to slow down as posted.
Yeah, and as posted, what is the general rule for work zones?
It all varies. In general, you see an interstate, depending on our paving operation, you're probably going to go from, if it's 70, down to 55. If you're in a 55-mile-an-hour section, it's probably going to drop to 45, so forth. So a lot of times, you get in a point where 45 is considered a, even though it's a hazard, it's generally considered a safe construction speed. You don't normally see, if you go from 45 to 35, it's not because resurfacing operation. It may be a bouquet, maybe something on Schillinger Road because of the phase work, and you're shifting traffic back and forth in a short area. So you got barrier rail right out there next to the pavement. It's something that's a hazard or a risk out there to not just the workers but to the traffic. So
this, you know, I think about that. I mean, obviously, this was important no matter what every year, but now with the infrastructure bill passing and the increase in road work, I mean, there's going to be, am I right, Skip? There's going to be more road work now?
There's supposed to be more. We're counting on the fact. We're looking forward to
that's what we're all waiting on, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is even more important because all that stuff isn't going to get done unless somebody's out there doing it.
Exactly. We've been in a more of a maintain operation for years due to the lack of funding, and now that additional revenue is coming in, that revenue is going to be really used to construct, add capacity, and so it's kind of like the for those movie baseball buffs, you know, if you build it, they will come.
Yes,
absolutely. If you turn, you want economic development, you add to your infrastructure, and then you see how it changes your economy.
Yeah, that's of course, like I know any part of the state you go to, somebody tell you, well, yeah, that means us. But I mean, Southwest Alabama, we got a dog in that hunt. We need some expansion.
I-10 is definitely a hot topic in the Mobile area these days.
Really, this bridge thing? It's a bridge thing. But anyway, you don't say. It's, what about, side note, too, something I think is pretty cool, because, like I said, it's not every day I get somebody in to talk about this. We talked during the news break about rumble strips, that may not be the right word for it, but the thing, stuff that's on the side of the highway that when somebody starts drifting off, goes, let me get a scientific, something like that when you hit it. What is that? What's the story with that?
It's called scoring by cutting. You know, okay. For years and years, we wound up putting aggregate out on our shoulders, a surface treatment out there, and that was a color difference between the roadway, and as well as that rock generated a noise difference, trying to keep people on the road, give them some kind of indication that, hey, I've drifted off the road, I need to get back home. You know, stone with time will wear off. That causes maintenance issues because, well, one, you don't have that noise or right. that color difference anymore, and two, you wind up with broken windshields. It caused more maintenance issues in the long run. And they came up with new techniques, and that was wound up. That was a study that was done by another state years ago, and now basically what we do is we pave our shoulders. We put this 16-inch groove out there on the edge of pavement, and roughly it generates enough noise and feels that we've all – Every one of us has drifted at one point in time, and you hear and feel that, and it's boom, you're gonna get back in the roadway. So that's what we use on our interstates now, on our two-lane roadways. Most time you see now, there's a 2-foot paved shoulder out there, and we're putting that out there in that 2-foot section for the same indication. We don't want you out there in the ditch. We don't want you out there in the woods,
right,
and
right.
That's some means of mechanism without putting. And some areas don't really need guardrail. I mean, it's just a fact. On any case, we're doing that now. It's to turn around and generate noise to keep you on the pavement when you turn around and jiff.
Okay, this is just my good old boy question to another. Do y'all do that while the cements or the asphalt is still like soft, or do you do that afterwards? Or I'm just how do you make those indentations?
Because the way it's cut, it doesn't really matter. But in general, you see it done within 2 or 3 weeks after the asphalt getting placed.
Okay, but the asphalt's placed, the roadway's essentially dry,
right?
And then
right.
y'all go through and cut it. Okay, I just had to ask that because I've wondered about that. Some of the text coming in here, Supermom says, I thought they paved at night because of the heat. Cooler for workers, so that's not the reason, or
no? Of course, the workers will appreciate that versus putting asphalt down in July and August when it's 100 degrees and the heat index it's even hotter. But no, it's more about the traffic counts. It's more than trying to account for Supermom and others being stuck in traffic for hours on end when they don't have to be.
All right, remind folks once again that what's happening on Wednesday. Well, I know it's all week long. Once again, what is it, Road Work Awareness Week?
It's National Work Zone Safety Awareness Week.
Okay.
So, with our emphasis to drive like you work here. But yes, on Wednesday, the issue is to wear, or the promotion with us and our safety partners is to wear orange on Wednesday. So whether it's an orange shirt or your safety vest, we're all promoting to turn around and call attention to the motorists. And that's really what it is. We're trying to give an emphasis to the motorists. We've already talked to our people, so whether it's ALDOT or contractors, all this week we'll be having safety briefings with our people to make them aware, hey, when you're out there, keep your head on a swivel. Pay attention to what's going on, because you never know. Like I said, somebody drops their phone, a blink of an eye, they're on top of you, and all you can do is try to dive out of the way. But really, it's to call attention to the public. We're starting of the construction season. As we start, be aware, pay attention, break for Drake, break for Jake, and
right.
drive like you work there yourself.
You know what's what I think this is perfect that y'all are doing this, because and it may need to be reemphasized, you know, throughout the year and annually. But I think the majority of people, if they're thinking about it, want to do right. You know, and when y'all come out, y'all do this event here, and I know you're in Montgomery and around the state doing these, I think people hear it, people listening to you right now are going to say, it's going to stick with them. Next time they come up on a construction zone, I think, once again, most people will say, it's not like they were doing it before because they didn't care. They just, it was the last thing on their mind. Now it goes to the forefront.
And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to put this, as we start this construction season, to implant this, to ingrain it, to change our behavior, put on the top of your mind. So now as you enter a work zone, I need to stay focused. I need to be alert. Because it may be, you may enter in and Schillinger Road, perfect example out mm-hmm. there. So we're working the daytime. But you drive through and go, oh, they're not here at night. But maybe something's changed today. Maybe mm-hmm. that transition has changed from locations and you weren't aware of it, and now you think you're in a shift pavement, and it's not. It's moved. And now you wind up hitting a piece of rail, or you run off the road, or you run the shoulder, or you hit a drum. And it's just to make you more alert. Put your phone down. You can still talk to your daughter as you drive down the road.
That's
pay
right.
attention to the roadway when you're going through it.
Great advice.
Like I said, 4 out of 5 fatalities in work zones are the driver.
There you go.
It's not the worker, and we want everyone to get home safe at the end of the day.
Well said. Skip, thank you for your time. All right, we'll be right back. This is Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Monday. A big thank you to Skip Poe with Aldont, and it is something that's going on all week long. We'll remind you of this. I'm sure there'll be more as we get into Wednesday and Work Zone Awareness Week going on. And remember, Wednesday, wear orange. That is part of the big push here statewide to get people wearing orange to honor those who've lost their lives in work zones. All right, I mentioned also Mobile City Councilman John Williams for be joining us, and he's on with us now. Hey, John.
What's up, Sean? Good afternoon. It's a great day in Mobile, Alabama.
So, love it. I've got something to talk about with you that you had mentioned back, and I don't know if it was months or how many months ago, we were talking about the future of the Hank and what was happening out at the stadium, and you mentioned that, hey, you got to look at a contract here because the city, if we don't have a AA baseball team, may have to forfeit our rights to that property or something like that. And then I saw Steve Alexander's story with you the other day, and this is circled back around. Can you explain to folks what the situation is for the city and dealing with the Hank?
Yeah, I'd like to really, first of all, make it clear that I am not a lawyer. So this is all layman's terms.
That's how I like it.
There's a legal document out there that I didn't know about, and I'm not really sure that the city knew about. You know, we had a lot of turnover in administration and people, and years go by since the Hank was built. And it's called a land use agreement. It was brought to my attention by someone in the sports world. And it is this. That it says simply must use as a AA baseball affiliate venue or its equivalent. And it said in brackets, I'm going from memory here, I think it's soccer, football, whatever that might be.
It's equivalent. Yeah, I mean, that starts getting into the gray, right? Because what is the equivalent of AA baseball? Does it have to be a double-A version of that other sport, or could it be any kind of baseball? You want to say, what's more the equivalent of double-A baseball?
I mean, I would say that it's equivalent. It's kind of like saying that, you know, a 200-pound lineman or its equivalent. I think it'd be another 200-pound lineman. Not a you know, a buck and a half receiver.
Well, I'm just wondering if it was vertical or horizontal, meaning, you know, and this is the nuance that I don't know. Is it that it would be, its equivalent would be some sort of baseball at any level, or would its equivalent be horizontal and it would be any kind of double-A-esque sport. You see what I'm saying? That leaves. I mean,
I do understand. I do understand that. And I think that it's any double A sport. I think it was preferably the double A baseball because that's what it's built for, and that's, you know, the original intent. But it is what it is. I think it's funny that today we're talking about this. I dropped by one of the biggest fans ever of Bay Bears and Sports and Mobile, and the cart doctor, Dr. Trish. Of course, she has 106.5 tuned on, and we talked about it a little bit. And, you know, I think old man Art, he'd probably be flipping around if the Bay Bears had left while he was around. There's a lot of people that have got a lot invested in the Bay Bears, and we're just going to have to start thinking differently, I believe. And one of the things that's going to have to happen is the mayor, who I talked to today about this, is going to have to start at some time in the near future working with the landowner to see what will be the interpretation of that land use agreement. Maybe he tears it up.
I want to get to that in a second. So you got to figure out what can be done to head this off at the pass. And this is good for the discussion, because so many times people say, well, you know, you just put a whatever in there. You put a go-kart track, you put a Top Golf, you put a whatever in there. But let's talk some real facts. And real facts are, there's a legal document out there that says it's pretty specific what you have to achieve to be within the contract rules, right? I mean, you can't just do
absolutely
whatever.
I mean, you know, every agreement between two parties is subject to change. So, you know, but it's very clear on what our out has to be. And it goes on to say that you return it to the landowner in the form that you found it, basically.
How did we find it, by the way? What did it look like?
Not a lawyer.
What did it look like when we found it? Does that mean back to the wetlands that were there, or is it back to a construction site, or what does that mean?
I imagine we already traded out the wetlands somehow in that development. So I don't think that we would have to do that. I don't think that the landowner will want wetlands. But is it bringing up all the concrete and asphalt and every stitch of building and grass? I don't know.
So the city can lose the hank and be on the hook for the demo on the place and the moving the stuff you demolished out of there.
That's my layman's interpretation of it, Sean, and I have not had anyone disagree with me up to this point.
Holy cow. And the timeline on this, when do you have to...
I don't know that, I think it's a 6 months after it can, you know, that there's some kind of grace period. Again, I'm going off memory here. I can dig up that document one day. I sent it to you not too long ago.
Right.
But in this case, I talked to the mayor, and he knows that it's coming. It's on his plate. He also says that we have a full baseball season ahead of us. You know, one that I hope that the Mobilians would embrace and enjoy this final season as we hit the reset button.
If we did not have it, I mean, you can probably look at the numbers here. I mean, if those numbers are run, that if we have to turn it back over to the developer, I mean, some people will argue that if that number, and I don't know what that number is, but if it was a somewhat reasonable number to do that, it's a shame, but it's at least something off the books for the city, right? I mean,
that's absolutely right. When you look at it in the long run, is it a burden? Can we get it to a place of economic development? You know, maybe the McGowan properties finds more retail. Maybe there's some type of, you know, family activity, things that you just mentioned. I don't know. There is nothing on the table at this point. There's a whole bunch of people out there. I've talked to a couple myself. I know I've got some friends out there, Mike Williams, Stacy Hip, that they manage sports venues, baseball specifically. They'd love to have it for the championship baseball venue where they could have big tournaments and finish at a professional stadium. I don't know what's going to happen. My son just got through playing there a couple of weeks ago at a tournament, and those tend to make money.
You wonder about that, and this is absolutely off the top of my head and may fail a in-depth dive on the facts, but it seems like our city, we're a lot better at events that, you know, like a big event now and then versus the regular attendance at something, right? We're kind of a big event city.
We are. We're a one-day, lot of fun, big hype city. We like new stuff, and we like it interesting today. That's just the way we are. I think if Mardi Gras was year-round, it may lose its
agreed.
Its punch.
Yes.
But we bring it around, and we do it up, and we rock it, and we put it to bed. Oh, yeah. And I know there's other little activities going on throughout the year, but that's the way, that's the city. And so, I'm not saying there's something wrong with it. That's what you have to recognize, and that's what you deal with.
Because, well, I mean, I wonder about that. If no matter what you do, if it's a sports, you know, if it's something out there that's going to be, and listen, and baseball has so many games compared to football and other sports has so many games that you could ever expect the city to have the attendance numbers for whatever club would come in there. I mean, and maybe it's a lot easier. You know, people say, well, look at Pensacola. They have the same distractions with the water and the outdoors, and they do okay. Maybe something different about the transient nature of that population that changes more in Pensacola. But then you look up at Huntsville or whatever, Madison, where they're doing, where they're heading to be the Trash Pandas up there. Those people poured a ton of money into it up there, and it makes me believe they think they're going to be there for a long time.
Well, you know, a lot of people think that if you just, you know, spend more money this time, it'll work this time. Realize that the Stars left that, the Huntsville Stars, I believe I have that right, left that area 6-8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what they think will be different this time, circling it with retail and good fun. You know, we had retail and restaurants and at McGowan Park.
You get a massive retail at McGowan Park. I mean, now it came later.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, one of the newest retail that around for Mobile is right there surrounding the Hank.
Absolutely. So I don't know what the combination is. You know, the mayor, when we talked today, just simply said that that his goal is going to be that is a economic decision. And it's one that Mobilians will enjoy and be happy with. I think that's always his goal. And so he's looking at how do we make this a more family-friendly city. And I'm confident, I really am confident that he and Paul Wesch and the gang are going to find something that's going to be suitable. And they'll work through the legal documents.
All right. Can you hang on for a second for us to run to the news break? Because I got a couple more questions.
Okay, sure. Absolutely.
All right, thank you. We'll be right back. More with Mobile City Councilman John Williams right here on Midday Mobile. It's 1:46, and the news is next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 1:15, FM Talk 106.5, and welcome back. And big thank you to Mobile City Councilman John Williams hanging on with us. A couple questions here I had at the beginning about the future of the Hank, and now y'all meet tomorrow for Mobile City Council. Will anything about the Hank come up tomorrow?
I would not think so. I mean, it's really just simply not on the plate. The mayor will at some point bring a proposal to us. He says that there is nothing in the works at this point.
All right.
That we're going to consider all good things, and he assured me that the decision that whatever he proposed, it would be something good for Mobile. And I'm certain it will be.
All right. Something that has been discussed at council or around the council, and will it come up tomorrow? Got a couple texts about this. What about the annexation efforts here and bringing some new places into the city of Mobile?
I realize that this wasn't a pursuit of any new houses. This was a neighborhood that came to us with a petition of 100%. It is one of those options. In this case, there will be no public vote. It'll be a up or down by the council. They're either in or they're out.
So is that the way the process works? Does the city identify areas to annex, or do the places that want to be annexed come to you?
The answer is yes, both.
Okay.
We're always having to look at how the police jurisdiction is affecting the overall economics of the city, how it's the strain it's putting on our first responders, and what is the cost to the long-term, full-time, I call them, residents of Mobile that are paying full price. So we have to look at that, and that's a constant, ongoing process by the mayor and his administration. And then there is this, where we have a neighborhood, 100% of the property owners say we'd like to be a part of the city. We are, and they are on, they're connected, they're on just inside the police jurisdiction.
Now, so right now the issue would be those people that are in the jurisdiction are getting Mobile Fire, Mobile Police, and they're paying what percentage? Is it half the tax rate, or what is the actual number?
Half the tax rate in the police jurisdiction, that is correct.
So the,
retail is half the sales, but also half property tax.
Okay. Wouldn't you think that the motivation there, I mean, I know there are some people who are going to say, listen, I don't want to live in the city. I want to live in the county. I chose to live in the county. I don't want to live in the city. But other people, if they are faced with, I mean, let's just put it down, put the hay down there where the horses get after it. If they're faced with no police and fire from the city in that area, I think that a lot of those people might change their mind and say, maybe we do need to be in the city.
Absolutely. And you know, there's legislation right
sure.
now. In the at the State House, that very subject. And I think it's got people's attention. Also, what has everyone's attention? Realize that you're correct. They're getting full police and fire in the police jurisdiction. What they are not getting right now is a first response from our fire rescue. They have to they call 911, EMS, county EMS is the first call. If they cannot respond, then immediately. Dispatch goes to Mobile Fire Rescue as a second option.
I mean, so these cities, though, I mean, and you were talking about that legislation. I know that we had talked to Senator Chris Elliott about it. If this thing, what's funny, I looking around the country, realizing that this is a lot more common. I just kind of know the place I live. I always thought this extended jurisdiction was a thing, but it's not a thing a lot of places. Most places, it's not. But if those cities, if those people outside, if they choose not to be annexed in or work this, and they are not annexed in, they're going to have to form, I mean, aren't they going to have to form volunteer fire departments, or they're going to have to form a new municipality or something like that? I mean, there's going to be no one to respond.
If the legislation passes at the state, as I understand it, and withdraws that from our responsibility, then absolutely they have to. But right now, I want to make this so clear. They are getting, at the police jurisdiction, in that PJ, they are receiving police and fire service from Mobile, the city of Mobile. It is only the fire rescue that we have withdrawn and allowed the county EMS to be the first response.
Right, but if this law passes and there's not a requirement, I mean, you got to. What's your feelings? Would you as
you're
a councilman?
You're absolutely right. If there's no requirement, then we need to focus inward. And I think that we're going to see a lot more effort by those living there to join the city.
I mean,
and we're going to have to make economic sense out of it.
Well, it seems
we simply cannot start taking in all that want to come in at the peril of our ISO 1 rating. That's very important to the people of Mobile who've lived here long-term and paid full rate.
But won't
so
these people... But
will be at,
Councilman Williams,
will have that weighed in.
If these
yes.
people are annexed in, they will be paying full freight at that point too, though.
Well, full rate, if there is a tremendous infrastructure need adding to our backlog and putting a greater burden. Here we're talking about a well-maintained 47-house subdivision.
Right.
That is already right there on the PJ, and so the numbers work. But when we start reaching deeper into that police jurisdiction and beyond to connected land, that may not be the case. We always have to be looking out for the economic of the city and that first responder rating. It's very important to everyone who's paying insurance and living here.
Sure it is. Yeah, and it's and hats off again for Mobile Fire Rescue for achieving that, and that means a lot to us. I just think and I understand what you're saying. You get into the county, you have places where you don't have the density of houses, you don't have the retail locations, you don't have all those things. I get that. But at the same time, there are certain ways the city could grow, I think, bringing in areas to the west that would benefit the city as a whole. When stores decide whether they're coming or there's government grants for the size of the city, I mean, the city could grow substantially in population.
certainly, I think you always have to be trying to grow, grow smartly. There is there was a time when everybody just built out on the edge of the cities, and Walmart's one of them. Look, I'm a big Walmart fan. They do a lot for folks that are less fortunate, and they help our food bank system work. Amazing, but they build out on the edge of the city where they only have to pay half price for full price.
Sure, they're making a business decision. Right, I get it.
So we need to make that decision as a result. And we can't continue to allow this economic development out there that puts a great burden on our fire rescue and our first responders at the peril of those who are paying full price.
There you go.
It's just simple economics.
I appreciate your time, as always. I know you will try to talk after council meeting maybe later on this week and see if anything new on this has come up. Mobile City Councilman John Williams, thank you for your time. Thanks for being on with us.
Have a great day, Sean.
Will do. So there's John Williams, and we're wrapping up for today. Feinbaum Show on the way next, as they will go back through the details of the last, 1.6 seconds of the Auburn-Virginia game? Wow. 1:58. We'll be back tomorrow morning, bright and early, for Mobile Mornings here on FM Talk 106.5, online at fmtalk1065.com. Stream the show there. Stream the show over at TuneIn Radio, that app for your smartphone. And while you're there, check out our podcast as well. All right. Y'all have a great one.